Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hi, and welcome back to another stream after another insane week. But it's a special stream today. We have some special guests coming at our halfway mark, all the way from the Balkans, finally. A lot of events happening there, as even right now, up to this minute in Belgrade. And we'll get to that later. But first, Murat, how are you?
How are you doing? I see you're dressed like my Twitter profile picture character.
Oh, I can do actually the entire photo.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. I should have, I got to match next time. I got to find a hat. I got to get the tracksuit.
This is actually Aria's hat. I'm not supposed to be wearing it.
It looks brilliant. It's almost our nation's birthday. How will you be celebrating?
I'll be wearing my papaja or my ushanka. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually kind of nervous about the big 4th of July celebration, given all of the tensions in the country and given the recent uptick in intelligence saying that we should expect not false flags, so we should expect terrorist attacks. It's kind of unsettling. What do you think?
Well, I wasn't as unsettled as you. I did have a 4th of July joke to start the show with. Why did the American flag cross the road?
Why?
To show its true colors. And you can start us off after that.
I don't even get it. All right. But anyway, speaking of true colors, by the way, please like and share this stream. We're shadow banned on Twitter again. So thanks for getting us past 400,000. Huge milestone. But of course, with success comes failure. So now we're shadow banned again. I think we went a little too hard against Elon and friends, so that could be the reason. But speaking of terrorist attacks, let's talk about the leader that we have to protect us from them, I guess. Another emotional breakdown this week from Trump. I'm mostly interested in this, his white knighting for Bibi and what MAGA kind of thinks about that. You know, we've had these discussions constantly that are like, who controls who? And I actually asked everyone last night, Trump asked Israel to pardon or cancel, postpone Bibi's trial. If Israel responds in the positive, who's in charge? And no one wanted to answer that question. So I guess we're going to dive into that today. So first, I'm not going to read all of these to you, even though I know you guys love my Trump impressions, but this is where it all started on the 25th. So 4 days ago, and Trump came out calling Bibi a warrior and saying that his trial, you know, it's a farce. He deserves better than this. He's a hero. It should be canceled immediately or a pardon given to the great hero. I love the part where he goes, there is no one who could have worked better in harmony with the president of the United States. Me! He had to put me, like, right there. I just, like, that is just so Trump. He's, like, almost endearing, but it's, like, the madness of his Truth Socials. What were your thoughts when that post first came out?
Just like with, you know, last week we had MIGA.
Yeah, that's right. MIGA, please.
And this week we have with BB. Trump has really let loose his emotions on Truth Social, and it is just kind of really himself. I thought that his comments on Bibi were it's a perfect setup for the far right worldview, which is, you know, worshiping hierarchy. And it really all just, oftentimes it ends up bending to this, where the strong man just has to tell you, just go with it. Just go with what I'm saying. I know it doesn't make sense, but it'll make sense later. And, you know, just roll along with the plan. Trump has just been cheerleading for Bibi all the way. I mean, he's got the pom-poms out. He's talking about, you know, what a great victory he's had, how he's being bogged down, you know, with these court proceedings and various, you know, courtroom drama. I was joking on the stream or on the space yesterday how this almost reads like one of those jury summons, you know, when your boss has to write a note for you to get excused from your jury duty. And he's just, you know, they're singing your praises or whatever, or talking about, you know, how hard at work you are, you know, on whatever else you're working on. But it's for MAGA, they have to contend with the fact that they now have to make this all add up and have to fit this square peg in the circle.
Yeah, I'm interested, and not out of like a, I told you so. I'm just kind of interested what their narrative is, because, you know, we did it on our stream where we were like very much playing devil's advocate against that Bibi Trump tweet or beef, and we didn't really believe in it. And we were kind of like, maybe. And MAGA really was excited about it. They were like, finally, he's putting him in his place. So I'm wondering what their sort of narrative is how we get to the point where they were arguing and they took that as authentic and him sort of putting Bibi in his place. And then how excited they got, you know, what was it, like a week and a half ago when the news came out? Like, oh, he yelled at Bibi and told him, you know, stop bombing. And Bibi got upset and MAGA went nuts for that. But how do we reconcile that with now this tweet?
Also, it's another chance for them to be like, oh, 70 chess. He got us one more time. He's so smart. He's so brilliant. You know, it's like they love to any opportunity they get to praise him for that, they will. So I know this will be another case where they're going to be like, oh, but this was so clever. And you know, they fooled. And actually this was actually fairly adeptly done. You know, the way that they kind of framed how they were beefing at first, and then now we've come so far from not beefing from a month ago that, you know, we almost forget. But yeah, I mean, MAGA is just going to tell us how this has just been another masterstroke of the great negotiator Trump.
Right. I think some context just to add, I know our viewers definitely know, but during these tweets, there's the ping pong going back and forth of whether they're obliterated or severely damaged or not touched or they're still functioning. So all of that's also kind of going on. And then we get his shout out to the Ayatollah, which also hilarious when he says, like, you're a religious leader, you shouldn't lie. Like, what is he talking about? And that's why our thumbnail to Ned's like, I said obliterated, because it's just like, it's very much like, I almost read it as such, like, say they're obliterated or I'll bomb them again and make them obliterated. That's almost like where I'm like, I don't know, like, I'll give you something to cry about.
Also, he always has to add in these irrelevant details, like he saved them from an ugly and ignominious death. I mean, like, saving him from death would have just been good enough, but he's gonna, you know, in Trump language, he's like, he would have died like a dog. No, that's his favorite line, where he's like, I saved him from an ugly and horrible and painful death. And it's, you know, he's talking about the supreme leader of the Ayatollah, you know, but ultimately I don't know what he wants. Does he want the Ayatollah to come out and issue a statement? It's unclear. Like, what this message was actually just completely misdirected for me, because I don't even know who this is aimed at or what the objective of this particular message was.
Right, because the Ayatollah is obviously going to come out and say, we're fine, and, you know, we'll persevere. You can't expect him to come out and corroborate your story, even if it was true. It's just a very odd expectation. And then we get the Bibi is a war hero. Just terrible what they're doing to him. It's a political witch hunt. You see some parallels. Is he drawing parallels to himself?
Yes.
Yeah. Why does he keep mentioning the Bugs Bunny doll? I'll have to dig into that. That's like the cigars.
Bugs Bunny doll. Yeah. That's meant to be a little decoy, because he's meant to throw in these little details that the reader is meant to read and be like, huh, what is that? Oh, yeah, maybe his trial is pretty stupid. Maybe they are kind of putting him through a witch hunt. Let me go look into that rather than read, you know, the rest of this, you know, nonsense statement. But he loves his sloganeering, right? Let BB go. He's got a big job to do. So what? I'm kind of curious about what the big job is, because I thought the big job was already mostly done.
Correct.
Which was Gaza. So what remains of Bibi's big job to do? Is it like the Abraham Accords?
Well, we'll talk about that probably after the Serbia section. But in the midst of all this, the two Bibi and Trump, I guess, in their ultimate intelligence, want Iran to just hand the uranium over. This is like not Dumb and Dumber. They're not quite that, like that. It's just like Laurel and Hardy or something. I don't even know what this is. These two are hilarious. Like, what are these two? And then, so then this morning, Trump takes back, the Israeli media, most of it didn't really take that kindly to what Trump said on Truth. This is Haaretz, who obviously is like the left media. But I was curious as this, their interpretation of it, which was interesting to me, was Trump implicitly threatens U.S. aid to Israel unless his trial is canceled. That's pretty interesting that's their interpretation of it. It's very tit for tat and quid pro quo. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's the correct interpretation, or that was just sort of Haaretz being Haaretz?
You know, I thought it was Haaretz being Haaretz a little bit, but the interesting thing about that story is the way that frames Trump and Bibi working together, as opposed to Trump just working with Israel. You know what I mean? Like, this is Trump and Bibi against the world. This is in cahoots against the government of Israel, against the government of the U.S.
Yes. So
this is a little bit different, because now, you know, we're not thinking of, you know, these entities as these teams that are all working together.
These are
crooked leaders that are in power that are trying to save their own skin. You know, Bibi in Israel and Trump over here. And yeah, I mean, this is a whole new dimension for that.
That's so true. I love that you said it's them against the world. And that's it. Because everybody would be like, well, Mossad has stuff on Trump. I'm like, Mossad is another entity. Like, that is not Israel. CIA, this. Oh, that's another entity. There are all these different pieces that are working together. And it's absolutely Trump and Bibi could 100% count on one another. But then Trump took today, and we'll talk more about this later, today on True Social, he screamed, make the deal in Gaza, get the hostages back. And so it will be. We'll see. But also today, the big news, the court cancels Israeli PM Netanyahu's trial hearings this week. Now,
so it works. Yeah, I mean, of course.
So it worked. They cited a few reasons. So they were given explanations by, this is interesting to me, they were given explanations by the defense, BB's team. And it was first denied. Then the tweets came out. Now it's not denied all of a sudden. They asked him to be excused from testifying over the next 2 weeks to focus on security issues following the ceasefire with Iran and ongoing fighting in Gaza. The statement stated, the national need or cited the national need for the prime minister to devote all his time and energy to the political, national, and security issues at hand. They were approved, and then the opposition obviously came out and criticized Trump and said that he shouldn't be interfering in a judicial trial in an independent country. Is it though?
I think Bibi's life will end with him having to run away to the U.S. The U.S. will be where he's safe. I mean, ultimately, like, if there ever is justice in Israel, like later on for him, I think it'll just have to be the U.S. where he runs away to. This is be the place where he's safe, not even in Israel.
It'll be in Florida.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I just find this whole kind of this dynamic between the two of them so fascinating. Now they're talking about a visit. So I'm not sure. And they give the timeline of 2 weeks. We've heard that timeline before, and we've heard it again with this ceasefire. So what are your thoughts? We already know what?
They love the 2 week notice.
They love a 2 week notice. Yeah. That's a very isn't that very business-like, giving you a 2 week notice? We've already been watching the cargo planes go from, a lot of them have been leaving Cologne, but they've obviously been going from NATO states to Israel, huge cargo lifts. Obviously, there was a discussion that they depleted 20% of the international THAAD supply, which is pretty major. So they're struggling for interceptors. Do you think that the attack will happen within these next 2 weeks? Do you think that the 2 weeks is for armament? What are your thoughts about the next stage in the war between Israel and Iran? Because it's clearly not over. There's been no real concrete news about peace talks. They're not calling it peace. They're making sure they call it a ceasefire.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Using their language precisely. So what are your thoughts, the next steps in that conflict?
Yeah, I don't see Iran giving in. I think there's a lot of pressure on them to keep this going and to continue saving face. But that being said, you know, like all credit to them for kind of digging into that. I do think there will be attacks in these next 2 weeks. So I think there will be. I don't think that we've seen the end of the war yet. My guess is I do think this ends in. I do think the regime's on a little bit shaky ground in Iran. So I think that the war goes on, and there is some doom on the horizon for the regime. But that's just
which part of the regime.
The Ayatollah regime, the mullahs.
Why?
Why do I think that? Yeah. I see that Iran is in between a rock and a hard place. I think that they either have to double down on their nuclear program or they have to give in, which sort of is seen as a loss in legitimacy. And I think that loss in legitimacy is what, I mean, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be like a Ceausescu sort of overnight thing. But I think that loss in legitimacy due to this nuclear program is going to be what is the end of this Iranian regime.
Why do you think that it's a loss of legitimacy in regards to the nuclear program? I think that it's the opposite.
Because do you think they have a nuclear program or do you not? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And so I think that them being exposed for not having a nuclear program is going to show why they're able to be kind of pushed around. So I think they don't want to be seen as being pushed around. So they'll stay in fight, but I think they'll lose that fight. So that's just kind of my prediction.
I think it also shows them as a good faith actor. Not that that really matters, but it does apply some legitimacy. What do you think about the conversation we had last night? We've been having it with our teen. Shout out to our teen. Our neurotic Armenian Iranian, but Artina and I were talking about Trump kind of being in a trap of his own making, and with Bibi, or maybe with the Israeli intelligence services or IDF. So our reasoning was that Trump kind of utilized, because we didn't have the intel, Trump utilized Mossad and IDF intel to bomb the Iranian sites. And then afterwards, our intel was obviously very shaky. And, you know, the DIA report conflicted with the SecDef was, it was just a mess regardless. And then the IDF and Mossad both came out and said, they're not destroyed. They're just damaged. And so is Trump kind of now on the hook again because he uses Mossad IDF intelligence? Was this a slip up? Like, what are we doing here?
I get what you're saying. And the hard thing about this is that, like, no one has any incentive to be honest here, because, like, even if, say, we did destroy their nuclear program, they would have no incentive to just be honest about that. So they're always incentivized to just be like, well, you didn't completely destroy our program, right? All we can rely on is just our own intuition here, or what we suspect to be the truth. But you're right. Like, I get how we've also kind of slipped. In a way, we're relying on Israel's intelligence, and Israel's intelligence needs us to constantly feel that there is this Iranian boogeyman. So, like, there is this, like, reliance on someone who has an incentive to lie on to us all the time. But yeah, I mean, I still feel like Iran is the one that's in a more precarious position than, say, the U.S., which has, you know, the luxury of being able to sweat this out or sweat them out. So I obviously Trump has slipped up, because he's now, you know, he was an anti-war president, and now he's on the cusp of a war, and not just any war, but looks like what could be a major war, right? So he's clearly been roped into something he did not want. But I think it's still nevertheless Iran that's in, you know, going, like, it's the one that's closer to the fire than Israel or the U.S.
I think they got caught with their pants down a bit with a lack of air defense and a lack of coverage in their own airspace, you know, and them kind of, I'm wondering why they're so kind of not loud, overt. They're not loud. They're honest. They're like too honest almost. You're like, don't say that. Don't do that out in the open. Like, you know.
Well, the culture of kanging is really weird to me, because they have this thing where they'll like post these memes of, you know, tomorrow coming soon, you know, like they'll have like some AI video of missiles, and it's like, why are you like, wait, why are you tweeting this? Why are you letting me know? But I don't know. It's part of their, I don't know, their,
I don't even mean about that. Culture. That stuff's kind of silly. I mean, like, we're going to China to go look at J-10s, and it's like, just go. Or like, we're working on a nuke. Just build a nuke.
Yes.
Let's do what North Korea did. Build the nuke. We're not interested in a nuke. We tested a nuke. That's North Korea. Why not just do that?
The manner of doing it is not the right way of doing it. Like, the constantly blabbing and saying what you're doing.
I hate to say blabbing. I don't even think that it's blabbing or kanging. I think they're like exactly what Spontaneous just said. They're naively honest. They're like, you know, we've been told our whole lives Iran is this big boogeyman. They're horrible people. They're evil people. And it's like, they're actually kind of not. They're not. They're like, naively honest is a really good way to put it. They're almost like, doesn't everybody act in good faith in this arena?
Sure. They're like, oblivious to other people's
ulterior motives.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's like a really great way to be in your personal life, but not a good way to be in politics, maybe.
In geopolitics and international relations. Yeah.
What else do you have for us while we wait for our special guests to come? We can't talk about the spoilers at the end, and we don't have enough time to talk about it before our guests get here, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking over at, you know, of course, congrats on your article. It was another well-written article on an important thing coming up in the Middle East, which is the Abraham Accords, which is, you know, kind of this final piece meant to neutralize everyone and pacify everyone and get everyone on board, you know, including Saudi Arabia and Syria, you know, possibly other nations beyond. This will be, you know, this will be the new, treaty that holds together the Middle East.
I think we need to talk about, obviously after our segment with our guest, but I think we need to start talking about the Abraham Accords. They're a counterweight to something. Are they a counterweight to BRICS? Are they a counterweight? I think they're a counterweight to Belt and Road. I think that's how we need to start sort of looking at it. They're also there to defang people, neutralize people, and to isolate Iran. But that plan, the Abraham Accords, ropes India in sort of as their outlet into Asia. It's not a China thing. So it's also isolates or kind of pushes China out a bit. It serves a couple purposes. And I think that's what people need to start looking as well into the Abraham Accords. Because, you know, we try to explain to people while the 12-day war, I hate even calling it that. Was it even really a war? 12-day war occurred while all that was kind of going on. And I lost my train of thought anyway. But that's kind of how we need to look at it, is because they're using these sorts of institutions and liberalizations. They're really just political tools, more Washington consensus and stuff. But we're going to dig into that more after we talk about Serbia, which there's a lot of goings on there.
And I mean, we could it's interesting, we could do a space actually on the World Island, but you know, we had Ricky ask about the World Island yesterday. And all these conflicts, in a sense, are as you mentioned, ways to isolate China. Because you have, you know, it's the western half of the World Island trying to move these chess pieces, you know, in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe, you know, with Ukraine. And it's all meant to sort of pull these larger pieces in the middle towards us and away from China.
Exactly. Now you just jogged my train of thought, which is exactly why when I was explaining to people, Iran, the 12-day war serves of many, many purposes and satisfies a lot of things. And one of those things is that it's a very soft underbelly of BRICS. And I just say BRICS because China and Russia, it's the soft underbelly of that sort of alliance over there. And it's a very easy route in when you're not getting anywhere in the Ukraine theater or the Taiwan theater. So I think that there's also an element of that, which I find kind of not scary, but sort of like, again, or I don't know but yeah, I definitely think that the 12-day war and the follow-up part two, Electric Boogaloo, are serving a purpose to further isolate China and Russia, for sure. I just don't think that Russia sometimes sees it that way.
But Taiwan, I mean, the Taiwan thing, I'm so unprepared for that because that's a I know nothing about, and I when there are developments, I will still, you know very little as it's happening.
The interesting thing about Taiwan is that we've made a mountain out of a molehill in the United States about it. It's China, and China knows it's China, and it's just kind of biding its time. But when the Nimitz left that theater, China did two carrier deployments around the island, doing takeoffs and recoveries of their jets. I thought that was pretty interesting. Just to kind of say, we can do this. We have carriers now. We have two carrier strike groups, and it's the first time they had ever done it. So I think that window for the United States is closing, and they know it.
Yeah, I mean, whoever had come up with that microchip arrangement with Taiwan was extremely crafty, because they had realized that that was going to be one way to guarantee security for Taiwan, or have U.S. invested in it. But it's mind-boggling to me that we had not figured out any alternative to that microchip issue with Taiwan.
There's a lot of things that we've kind of put on the back burner in Southeast Asia, or that it's been like an afterthought. Like, it's like anywhere China steps foot, we come right up after. So we're kind of just eating China's leftovers in a way. And we have one of our guests here, so I'll bring him up the panel while we wait for Mario. Here's Mio Drag. You're not topless, are you? Oh no, you have a shirt on.
No. I will go without camera because actually I'm working you know, like every superhero has two jobs, you know, and it's during the daytime I'm a journalist, and during the nights I work as a security, you know, because you can't leave.
Serbian, I know, is either a driver or a security guard, like a security or
security guard. I don't even have a driver's license, to be honest, you know. So yeah, I'm like strange in that regard. Never mind. Okay, don't let me talk about myself. I can do it for a long time and bore everyone to death. So please, introduce me to
about Serbia. Obviously, I've been getting a bunch of questions. So the last set of protests, we very much stayed very neutral during the very long ones that actually sparked these snap elections and all of that. In the interim period, thank you, Sammy. In the interim period, we actually found out that the Vučić government was selling weapons to not only Israel, but Ukraine. Now I'm on the side of the protests, but I want you to tell us what the sentiment is like in Belgrade. Were people upset about the sales to Ukraine and Israel? Are those part of the protests? The protests today, obviously, for our viewers, are because those snap elections were never fulfilled. And they want Vučić to resign. So, Beatrice, I'm going to give you the floor as well. Oh, Mario, finally.
Finally.
did Mario join us, huh?
Yeah. Hi, Mario.
I think that Mario probably has more information than myself about the protests, because I think he's much into the subject than I am. Of course, everybody in Serbia is part of the protest one way or another, but I think that Mario has probably more information. I very welcome him entering the discussion.
My question was, for us, I'm talking for DDG, we didn't support the first set of protests. We took a neutral stance. We just didn't want it to develop into a color revolution or anything weird. It didn't, obviously. But in the in-between period, we had the two news stories come out of the Vučić government selling weapons to not only Israel, but also Ukraine. Israel, I take as a conflict that Serbians are probably like, we don't want anything to do with that. Why are you even bothering? And then obviously with Ukraine, they would be more pro-Russian. So this would be something. Then we had the issue that Vučić did not schedule the parliamentary elections. And now we're here. So I think we're ready to take a stance and support these protests. But before we do that, I want to get more information from you guys in Belgrade so our viewers understand what's going on as well.
Yeah, hello, guys. Thank you for having me. DD Geopolitics rocks. That's the ultimate, you know, like saying here in Serbia and the region. I want to say hello also to my colleagues, Darković, Zare, ciao, brate. I was fixing up my mustache because I just came from the streets. I didn't have time enough to listen to Zare about the information, but I can give you the fresh, like latest from the last minute information that more than 35 or 40 cities right now are blocked in Serbia. Barricades are being made on boulevards, on the roads, like the most trafficked roads with the most traffic. So, and Vučić is in Sevilla talking about climate change. And maybe he will get Greta Thunberg, you know. Maybe right. He will have some photos and stuff, you know, handshake. But everybody knows right now that Zelensky is like second. Like who makes shake hands with Vučić? He is not only losing a political stand, but he is losing a state. So don't shake hands with Vučić.
Yeah. Have you guys both noticed that, especially over the last 6 months to a year, Vučić has really leaned westward? No.
Oh no, that happened long ago. I mean, he was always actually leaning pro-West. The West brought him to power, or helped him come to power back in 2012. Many people from outside of Serbia probably don't know that during the elections, when he supposed, I mean, those elections that actually enabled his party to become the ruling party. It was actually presidential elections, and then candidate won in the second round. He won against the then incumbent president Boris Tadic. Tomislav Nikolic was the candidate of the Workers' Party. And the EU congratulated Tomislav Nikolic on the victory 3 hours before the voting even ended. So the voting ends at 8 o'clock in the evening. They sent him congratulations on 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So Vučić was always helped or supported by the West. I mean, at this point, I believe that Mario is going to agree with me on this. Right now, the only thing that keeps Vučić in power is a foreign assistance or foreign aid, because he virtually has no support whatsoever inside of Serbia.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to say that he doesn't have supporters. I'll get to that, you know. But just to be clear, in Serbia, he virtually has no political support. I mean, he has voters, but they are not organized in any way, and they are really not ready to risk anything for him, even though they may support him. And I really think that it's now obvious that they are in the minority. Maybe not huge minority, maybe like 30% or 35%, but he lost the majority of the country. Majority of the country is against him, and that same majority is pretty much evident, you know, they are ready to even sacrifice their jobs or their livelihood or whatever in order to bring him down. So if you have that kind of situation in the country, and the guy that is the target of all that protests and everything, that is still not only in power, but it doesn't look like anything can bring him down. It's only because of the foreign support. Somebody is supporting him from outside of Serbia. Now, who that may be, that's what Mario said. It is definitely not Russia. It is definitely not China. It's definitely not Iran or Brazil, you know. So it has to be, and just logistically, logically, you know, when you think about it, it has to be the West. Most particular, more probably, I think now at this point, he's even more supported by Donald Trump and his administration than by the EU. But, you know, EU has their role in it. I mean, I would like to hear if Mario agrees with me, at least on that. Hello?
Yeah. But no, Aleksandar Vučić was not deported from Brussels. He was deported from Florida. He was deported from Miami. So I think that the relation between Vučić and Donald Trump, because the regime here in Belgrade tried, and we have numbers, how much did it cost to get Vučić closer to Donald Trump through some truckers in United States, you know, and it was, you know, here Serbs are like really ashamed that we have a guy who is representing us right now in the world, like he's representing us, and Vučić lost his credibility, if he had all, but he lost the credibility in Washington, and it's, you know, it's Trump, it's Donald Trump, it's a guy who had a reality show, you know, like, and he lost credibility there. So it's like the guy right now, he only can look towards Brussels, towards Ursula von der Leyen, towards Emmanuel Macron, who just kissed the First Lady of Brazil in the mouth. You know, he's going to get slapped again from Brigitte, from his husband. And so I don't know where Vučić can turn to when it comes to foreign relations or interference. This here, what we have, this is just...
The Israelis.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. I think that Sarah already hit the nail on the head, you know, like, Israelis. I mean, that's something that we only speculated about, but never knew exactly until like a week or two ago, when it was confirmed that Serbia is shipping weapons to Israel. Now, four or five years ago, Bulgarian journalist Diliana Gaitanjieva made a big news. I guess that Sarah probably remembers that. I'm sure that you, Mario, remember it. When Diliana Gaitanjieva published her documents about the ways all the ways that diplomatic flights are used to send weapons to Islamic rebels, Islamic militarists in Syria. And in all those operations, Israel was involved, you know, like every single plane that she talked about landed in Israel for a suspicious amount of time, like for 40 minutes or something like that, you know. So Israel and American companies were heavily involved in that operation. And from the European side, Serbia, Bulgaria, and Croatia, as far as I can recall, were the top countries that were sending the weapons to Islamic militarists in the Middle East, you know. So even back then, Vučić and many other countries in the region were in bed with Israel in some nefarious business. So I think that he has a strong support by Israel even at this point. I mean, you, Mario, know that any number of his advisors or public relations specialists were actually Israeli personnel, you know.
He's still there, the special advisor. I will find, like, I just need, like, it's hard to remember those Israeli names, you know. I lived in Israel for some time. I know the stuff there, but I never could remember their names. And this guy who was like, he's basically prosecuted by Israel because selling the information, the military information to Germans. He's now living in Belgrade. He's first, like I don't know, like digital manager of Aleksandar Vučić. So, but I will skip just that. When it comes to Russia, when it comes to Serbia, I will just say one thing. Like, this is exclusive stuff. Like, I know three opposition activist leaders who traveled to Moscow in the last 2 weeks.
You're going ahead. You're going ahead. I have to ask the question. Shippers, I was gonna ask. I wanted to ask Miodrag what he thought about why the timing of the Russian reporting about the weapons, why they decided to release it now, and how you felt about the uptick in Russian presence at these protests. There were Russian reporters at the last one, but not in the large amount as this one. As I think, I'm kind of getting the vibe that Russia's turned on Vučić and they're done.
Listen, I think it would be too complicated for me to go into that. You know, it's a long, long story. The sad reality is that a single political party in Serbia maintains strong relations with Russian political entities, and that is the Socialist Party of Serbia, which is part of the ruling coalition, but also they are in a very strange, very, very difficult relations with the Vučić party and with Vučić personally. Ivica Dačić, the president of the Socialist Party, is in very difficult relationship. They have a very, very difficult relationship, him and Vučić. And I believe that they are trying to squeeze Socialist Party out of the next government. And they can do that only if Dačić is out of the parliament for a number of reasons, you know. So they're probably trying to bring it up. Now, Dačić's party, Socialist Party, is effectively in control of the energy arrangements with Russia. Everything that comes, be it gas or gasoline or whatnot, from Russia to Serbia is one way or another controlled by Dačić's political party. And Dačić is often looked at from Moscow as the same way Yanukovych was looked at while he was the president of Ukraine. Like, he is our guy. That's how he is viewed from Moscow. Whether it's 100% true or not, that's debatable, but there is some merit to that, you know. And I think that right now Dačić is, because we had a couple of local elections like two weeks ago, and Socialist Party of Serbia, well, their results were abysmal. They were disastrous in both of those elections. Now that's happening like only 3 years after previous elections where, on the wave of the Russia-Ukrainian war, Socialist Party actually achieved the best results since the 90s. You know, so At one point, Socialist Party was even threatening Vučić's popularity or Vučić's party's numbers, you know. And because of everything that's been going on in Serbia, they are now on the brink of political extermination. And I think that that actually, I wouldn't say scares Russia, but Russians definitely don't like that, you know. I think that would be one of the reasons. Now, Vučić is, Mario probably knows a lot about that too, you know, because it's been in the news. Vučić is for months now trying to make Dačić's positions in all those arrangements with Russia in regards to energy, he's trying to make his position unsustainable because he is threatening, Vučić is threatening, which is ridiculous. Vučić is threatening with American sanctions against our national oil company that is cooperating with Russia. I mean, Vučić was the one who broke the news that America is... probably going to hit NIS, that is the company, the name of the company, NIS, N-I-S, that America is probably going to hit NIS with sanctions. At that point, not even American ambassador in Serbia, Christopher Hill was the ambassador at the time, he didn't even, couldn't confirm that, you know, when reporters, like, immediately after the Vučić conference, when he talked about that, you know, when they went, when they called Hill to ask him, do you know anything about this? No, I have no idea what Vučić is talking about, you know. So Vučić is doing something. I mean, I can't exactly point my finger exactly at what, but he's probably doing something in order to remove Dačić and the entire Socialist Party from all those arrangements with Russia, which effectively probably means that he's probably trying to remove him out of the political picture at all, you know? And that is probably, that's how I would interpret this. That's why probably Russia is right now revealing publicly what we've been suspecting, especially people who went to Donbass like Mario and myself, you know? We've been suspecting that Serbia is supplying Ukraine with weapons for a long time, but we didn't have any proof. Right now, Russians provided us with proof.
Wow. And then Mario, and I mean, a follow-up to that, you were out at the protests tonight. Did you, and you say you noticed the uptick in Russian reporting. Did you talk to any of them? Are you a star in Russia yet?
No. I haven't had the chance to talk to them because, you know, I got out before the shit started, and because somebody needs to give the news, you know, to the people, because mainstream media in Serbia, who are like all of them, like 90% of them are working directly under the Aleksandar Vučić and the regime. Somebody needed to give the information and split around to the world and to rest of the Serbia. But I saw a lot, as you saw, I saw a lot of reporters from Russia on one side. On the side where the protesters were, but on the other side, where are the tents that Vučić raised in front of the national parliament? You know, when they speak about Maidan and when they speak about protesters are going to make a new Maidan in Belgrade, Vučić has raised for 3 months or more than 3 months, tent city in front in the city center of Belgrade, in front of the national parliament. Those are his tents. And those people in there with the ski masks on, those are not students. You know, yesterday organized like a book night. You know, they were reading something, but they were not reading anything. They were waiting for a signal. So people should know the tents that look like Ottoman tents, you know, in a thousand years ago when we fought the Ottomans at Kosovo. Right now, we have the same replica in front of the national parliament in Serbia that Vučić raised.
No. Listen, Mario, I have to say it's not the same replica. There is nothing in the entire history of humankind, I guarantee you, there is nothing even remotely similar like what you can see downtown Belgrade. The village, it's like the perverse... it's unimaginable. It's indescribable. Yeah? You have to see it to believe it. You know, that's like, sorry, Mario, go on.
Yeah. And on that side where the tents were, on the side where Vučić's chatsis are, chatsis is like a nickname for those guys. They were handed out chips and Coca-Cola last night. You know, they were fighting for Coca-Cola and chips there in those tents. You know, it's crazy. You can see the videos. It's crazy. As Zare said, it's fucking parody. I'm sorry for cursing. But
sorry, Mari, if I may interrupt again.
Just a second. I did podcasts with Zara, you know. Zara can talk like 6 hours straight.
Just to explain to people, you know, Vucic is afraid that one of those protests may turn violent and the people may actually capture the government buildings or his presidential building, you know. So that is why in front of his presidential building and across the national system, he positioned that village that is supposed, like, I don't know, village is probably the best word to use, that is populated by supposed students who want to learn. You know, they are students who are against the protests, but there is not a single student there. I mean, you can count like two or three students. Rest of the people there are either well-documented criminals or hooligans or whatnot, you know, so they're armed with either baseball bats or with guns, literally, you know, so they're literally his Praetorian guard. But they cannot call, he can't call them Praetorian Guards. So they are under the disguise of students who want to learn, you know. Now, please, Mario, go on. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Okay. No. Because the point was that Rossiya Yedan, the other channels from Russia, especially from Moscow, were on the side where the protesters were, on the side where the Vucic tents are. Like the Serbian crew of Sputnik and Russia Today, you know. So they split it up. You know the sides. You know, we are going to cover from this side, and this part is going to cover from this side. But who watches RT Balkan in Serbia? I think maybe 4 or 5 people.
I think that. But really quickly, did you mention RT Balkans? I think RT Balkans should hire all of us and move us out to Belgrade, and we'll take care of our RT Balkans. And we can just make sure that it's good.
Yeah, of course. But when it comes to Russian media, it means a lot to people who saw the people. And nobody had problems, you know. Also, yesterday you had three guys who are directly working for the government. Every protest, you have three guys. And Zara knows who are that guy. Those guys. One of those leaders was found having an intimate relationship with a vacuum cleaner. I'm not kidding. Yeah.
They're always doing stuff like this.
Yeah, he's always sent to the protests with his two or three boyfriends to wave the EU flag, you know, and Ukraine flag or Georgia flag. So they stick around for 13 seconds and they ran away. You know, so there is, Vucic is controlling, like he tries to control the old sides, but he's losing, you know, and this is looking so sad. Zarek has more years in journalism than me, but you know, everybody here, like,
he's just trying to say that I'm older, you know. He's just trying to say that I'm practically dead. You know, as good as dead, you know. That's what he's trying to say. Any beautiful girl watches this, he's just reminding them that, you know, he's younger than me and more potent than that. You know, that's it, you know. Like, more experience in general, more years in general. Why did he even mention the word years, you know? He could have said it in a nicer way, you know, but he chose to say years, you know. Emphasize on years. Yeah, thank you, Mario. Yeah, I mean,
I didn't know that you speak so good American. Like, where did you get your education? In Washington?
Actually, I was trying to speak in Australian accent, you know, but
before we let you guys go, Murat, did you have any questions for Miodrag and Mario?
One of the running gags on our stream is the way that Trump really wants the Nobel Peace Prize this year. And recently he had mentioned he prevented war between Serbia and Kosovo, quote unquote. what was your guys' reaction to Trump's comment on that?
Well, if I may tell you, my family originates from Kosovo. I still have relatives there. I have a lot of friends there. I frequently visit Kosovo, and I am shocked and appalled and beyond furious whenever Kosovo is mentioned in that regard. First of all, because Serbia, sadly, is doing nothing to protect its state presence in the region or to protect Serbs that are still living in Kosovo. And sadly, Donald Trump is not right. Well, sadly, there is not a theoretical possibility that he's right. I would much more like that Serbia is both willing and able to conduct a war in Kosovo. I mean, yeah, I know that I sound like a warmonger right now, but, you know, sometimes, as the war in Ukraine is the perfect example, sometimes you have to fight injustice, not just to protest against it, or you have to fight injustice. Now, injustice in Kosovo is one of the gravest ones, one of the biggest injustices in the world at this point. You know, it's injustice that goes on for more than a quarter of a century. We were bombed because of it. We were the Kosovo region is occupied ever since. You know, our country was devastated in a number of ways because of the Kosovo issue. And I dream of Serbia that is both, as I said, willing and able to protect its rights and its people in Kosovo. Sadly, we are not at that day yet, and Donald Trump is just, you know, talking out of his bathroom, you know, or whatnot. You know, I mean, I do get why the same people supported Trump against Kamala Harris. Don't get me wrong, you know, but I don't think that Trump is actually too serious a figure. And his attempt to, I don't know, like win a Nobel Prize, I guess that he wants to make it even with Obama, you know. His attempts are really clownish or Vucic-like, if you want. You know.
Mario, do you have any thoughts about the war in Kosovo, Serbia that Trump...
I must agree with Zare. Also on this one, but firstly, when it comes to Nobel Peace Prize, like, who gives a F about Nobel Peace Prize? Like, it's like Euro song, like, shit, you know, like it's nobody cares about it, you know. So for sure, yeah, that's exactly like that. But I don't know if Zare mentioned it before I got in. I came to give it before I come to your question. The final results till tonight. I called them today. The Vidovdan results. You have Vucic, who arrested more than 100 Serbs, and you have Albanian terrorist Kurti, who arrested 17 Serbs. So, yeah, like, who is better at arresting?
Oh yeah, just,
Serbs
statistic. I've seen that statistic, so the people put it out a lot, you know, but it's really a false statistic because there was much fewer people were in Kosovo, you know, much fewer Serbs were in Kosovo. So percentage-wise, I think that Kurti even wins, you know, which doesn't say anything good about Vucic. So we just have to, you know, to never lose thought on what's really the biggest issue here, you know, the biggest issue, why is Serbia, Vidovdan is what Mario mentioned, you know, it's Saint Vito's Day. It is one of the most important dates in the calendar for Serbs because time and again throughout history, on that very day, Serbs did something that was remarkable or influential on a global scale, starting from the Kosovo battle in 1389 or assassination of Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo in 1914, you know? So, I mean...
Zare, did I finish? Did I finish?
No. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, so go on. Yeah. Sorry.
So when it comes to Donald Trump and his remarks about Kosovo, and you know, I really like Donald Trump, and he's like, he, for me, he was like a hit the greatest hit on American soil since, I don't know, like Jimi Hendrix, and you know, but it these kind of comments really are bringing Donald Trump, you know, to a point that he lost, you know, before the elections in the United States, you know, you had like Serbia is the most supportive country, like the people from Serbia are supporters like of Donald Trump, like 70%, you know, it was crazy. Right now, it is like approval rate is like really like around 10 or 15% tops, especially after Vucic made the deal with Donald Trump's Kushner, the son-in-law,
Kushner, yeah.
to build a huge waterfront. Hotel mm-hmm. in the middle. Yeah, in the center of the Belgrade, where this was the building of the army building that was bombed directly by the United States. So the popularity went down, like it decreased so much. But right now that project is stopped. So that's a good thing, because the American side found out that there was some kind of also corruption mixed in it. So I think that Kushner, his idea about building a hotel in Belgrade is not going to go as he plans. So he switched to Syria. You all know that he wants to build a Trump hotel mm-hmm. in Damascus. So I think that you can bring us like 10 Trumps, 10 Donald Trumps. Like nobody can handle the question of Kosovo and Metohija. The Kosovo and Metohija will stand open until all the Serbs are back at Kosovo and Metohija. Like there's no Trump, there's no Putin, there's no mm-hmm. Xi Jinping, there's no Ursula von der Leyen. Like, especially when you were born there, I know that Zare went there. You know what's crazy? For example, if me and Zare, like we, after this show, we say like we go to Kosovo, you know what would happen? The Serbian police will get an order from the government to stop us to enter to our land. So that's the problem, and I'm finishing here. Like, please continue.
You both.
And all of those agreements that Serbia signed and fulfilled, and all of those agreements in the last 15 years that Serbia gradually was giving up its rights to Kosovo, all of those agreements were made with the West. Not a single one was made with either Russia or China or Iran or Brazil or whoever. Yeah. Only with the West, only with the EU and USA. You know, so that's who our enemies are, and we have to know what I wanted to say before I was interrupted by the youngster, you know, with mustache. The Serbia's claim, two biggest claims to global influence are. Number one, Kosovo issue. With that, the West opened a huge can of worms, you know, in Pandora's box, you know, in the 99. And number two, but probably much more important at this point, is our relationship with Russia. You know, because we are historically, culturally, even politically, not represented by Vucic, of course, but politically in a broader sense, you know, we are the westernmost Russia's ally in Europe. And that is something that West cannot tolerate, you know, and that is why we are important right now. And God only knows what kind of deals is Vucic making at this point while we're speaking, you know, just in order to stay in power. God knows what he's willing to surrender out of our sovereignty or national integrity, you know, just in order to get some more support in order to remain in power.
Thank you both. That was probably more than our viewers were prepared for, but please let us know where they can both find you, or where they can find you both. And Mio Drag, let us know how your documentary is going. Also, Mario's podcast is linked in the description, but please tell our viewers where they can find you guys and what you're working on next. And please, we'll definitely have to schedule a time where you can both come back, because the audience is like, I love these guys.
Well, I mean, I was hoping that we're not gonna We're not gonna go into the. What? Did the ever polite youngster Mario just interrupt me?
Yes,
I mean, I'm shocked, you know.
Yeah.
I'm joking, of course. Yeah, I mean, I was hoping we're not gonna spiral down to name calling, you know. But Sarah had to ask me about the documentary, you know, like Mjodrag, what are you doing, you know? Why didn't you deliver the only thing anyone ever expected from you, you know? Like, yeah. So yeah, it's going on. I mean, it's a work in progress. You know, it will be finished. I mean, I'm going to quote my favorite author George R. R. Martin. When I finish it, you will know. So yeah,
perfect. I love that. And Mario,
but yeah. Thanks for the question and thanks for the invite. You know, and big salute to Mario.
With Mario, stay safe out there, but keep us posted on everything that's happening at the protests, and let our viewers know where to find you so they can stay. All right, both of you guys have a good Sunday and stay safe. Wow, that was I was gonna go over my article for the next segment, but I'm just gonna show it to you guys. Tell you guys to go read it, and then I'm gonna leave you because the Serbs have exhausted me, and I don't think I have anything else to add. But so
just read the article anyway; it's a very good and
article. Let's see. Share my screen. I always forget how to do this. Perfect. So here I wrote this article after another article came out on. I can't even remember the site. Oh, here it is. So this article came out the other day, and it was about a phone call that took place between four of these guys. It was Rubio. You guys probably can't see it. Trump, Rubio, Bibi, and Dermer. And they asked for some very specific things regarding Gaza, such as the hostilities ending, more other Arab nations getting involved. And so I started, and we had also heard from Steve Witkoff recently that two countries would be joining the Abraham Accord. So everybody was quite curious. Then I think I have the billboard in here in this article. Yeah, right here, this billboard, the Abraham Alliance. Well, I thought that was peculiar. We discussed Al-Sharaa being in there. And then I went to the website, abrahamshield.org. And that's what the article is about. You guys have to read it. It's scary as hell what they're talking about doing to Gaza. And coupled with Trump's tweet from today where he said, you know, get it done, make the deal. That coupled with this is pretty terrifying. But I was going to go into it more, but I was more than happy to let the Serbs kind of take up the bulk of the end of the episode. So please go to Substack. This article is free and read it. And I won't bore you guys anymore, but Murat, do you have any other thoughts for today before we hop into the next week?
Yeah. Well, Hill had an appearance on a podcast this week. It was very interesting. They discussed tech and AI. They discussed the Antichrist.
Yeah, how about we leave them with that sort of black pill? So guys, go watch the interview between the New York Times and Peter Thiel and tell us that we're wrong about Palantir. Other than that, I'll talk about the article at length tomorrow on Rachel Blevins. So if you guys are interested in the conversation that you missed today for the Serbs, then it'll be on tomorrow on Rachel Blevins. But we'll leave you with this amazing clip, the New York Times and Peter Thiel, and hope you guys survive the upcoming, I guess, ethnic genocide? I don't know. We'll see.
You would prefer the human race to endure, right? You're hesitating.
Yeah, well,
Yes?
I don't know. I would
This is a long hesitation.
There's so many questions implicit in this.
Should the human race survive?
Yes.
Okay.
But I also would I also would like us to radically solve these problems. Right. And so, you know, it's always, I don't know, you know, yeah, transhumanism is this, you know, the ideal was this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body. And there's a critique of, let's say, the trans people in a sexual context, or I don't know, a transvestite is someone who changes their clothes and cross dresses. And a transsexual is someone where you change your, I don't know, penis into a vagina. And we can then debate how well those surgeries work. But we want more transformation than that. It's the critique is not that it's weird and unnatural. It's, man, it's so pathetically little. And okay, we want more than cross-dressing or changing your sex organs. We want you to be able to change your heart and change your mind and change your whole body. And then Orthodox Christianity, by the way, the critique Orthodox Christianity has of this is these things don't go far enough. Like that transhumanism is just changing your body, but you also need to transform your soul and you need to transform your whole self. And so,
right. But the other, wait. I generally agree with what I think is your belief that religion should be a friend to science and ideas of scientific progress. I think any idea of divine providence has to encompass the fact that we have progressed and achieved and done things that would have been unimaginable to our ancestors. But it still also seems like, yeah, the promise of Christianity in the end is you get the perfected body and the perfected soul through God's grace. And the person who tries to do it on their own with a bunch of machines is likely to end up as a dystopian character.
Well, it's... Let's articulate this.
And you can have a heretical form of Christianity, that says something else.
I don't know. I think the word nature does not occur once in the Old Testament. And so, you know, there is a word in which, a sense in which the way I understand, the Judeo-Christian inspiration is about transcending nature. It is about overcoming things. And, you know, and the closest thing you can say to nature is that people are fallen, and that's the natural thing in a Christian sense is that you're messed up. And that's true. But, you know, there's some ways that, you know, with God's help, you are supposed to transcend that and overcome that.